This is the Credit Union Leadership Podcast with Mike Neal. Michael Neal and Associates has been consulting credit unions for nearly two decades. He and his team help companies with three aspects of growth: cultural development, leadership, and management development. To learn more about how Michael Neal and Associates can help your credit union grow, visit michaelneal.com. Producing this episode, I'm Chad Harrington. This is season one for the Credit Union Leadership Podcast, and it's called How to Create a Thriving Credit Union Culture. Today's episode is Organizational Culture, where Mike and I talk about what organizational culture is, the key elements of a thriving credit union culture, and how exactly leaders can create a thriving credit union culture. In this episode, you'll hear what Mike Neal has learned over his years of consulting hundreds of credit unions. And we've got a special guest, Mike Klober, one of Mike Neal's clients, who shares his experience along the journey toward a thriving organizational culture as a credit union CEO at Tinker Federal Credit Union in Oklahoma City. Here's Mike Neal on the Credit Union Leadership Podcast. When we use the term organizational culture, you know, it's easy to assume that we're all talking about the same thing. So what is organizational culture in your opinion?
Yeah. I think the best way to start that is by talking about what it's not. One of my heroes, John Cotter, has written many books, Harvard professor, written many books on leadership. One of his quotes from his book, Leading Change, and I'll paraphrase, is organizations most often think they're developing culture by implementing structural changes and system changes. In the credit union example, would be a branch redesign, a rebranding, management training, employee training, retitling position descriptions, on and on and on you go. He said the only thing that defines culture change is when behaviors change. Everything else is simply a delusion. And I think that's what happens so often. We have a tendency to be systems and structure people, left-brained analytical people that get into management in credit unions. And so when we want to change culture, then we implement things that become, for us, symbols of culture change. But the truth is, culture is defined by behaviors. What is appropriate, what is inappropriate, what is expected, and what is consistently seen behaviorally.
What's an example of a credit union that you know of that went through a major transformation of culture? So I'm talking where they were when they started, what happened during the change, and what the result was after.
Well, it's a really good question. It's a difficult question because in over 18 years of working with credit unions and well over 300 credit unions, there's a lot of great stories. But one of the ones I think that are really is a great example is Tinker Federal Credit Union in Oklahoma. Their CEO, Mike Klober, who many people would know in the credit union business, did an amazing job of leading that culture. They recently won a NAFQ Credit Union of the Year Award. They're just a great credit union with a very discernible and effective culture. So I'll be honest, when I started working with them, I had somebody say to me, well, good luck with that, right? And they provided some very disparaging comments about the way they approach themselves and how they operate. And the reality was, when we began to work there, we were really stuck. There was a lot of turf protection. There was a lot of silos of departments. It was hard to get anything implemented because everybody was thinking, oh, this is going to be work for my department now, or this is going to impact my department. Everything was seen as a potential loss or attack on their department, more work that I'm going to have to do. So everything was being shot down, nitpicked to death. And so we were in a meeting, and this is a very large credit union. There were, you know, 30, 40, 45 management people in the room. And Mike was just sitting back listening to this. And I think he could see that I was getting a little frustrated. And at just the right moment, he said, "All right, we're done. All I hear is why we can't do this. That time is past. The discussion is not whether we're going to develop this culture. We are. That decision's been made. Now the question is, how are we going to do it? And all I've heard for the last hour is all the reasons it can't be done. And that's going to stop here. Now the answers need to be about how we're going to get this done." And that changed everything.
We reached out to Mike Klober to get his perspective on the story. He shares behind the scenes, as well as the key role of the leader in developing organizational culture.
My name is Mike Klober. I'm the president and CEO of Tinker Federal Credit Union here in Oklahoma, and our corporate offices are in Oklahoma City.
So, Mike, you've known Mike Neal for some time now, and he mentioned that when he came onto the scene with your credit union, there was a tough situation, you know, just kind of in general. What challenges were going on at the time?
We are a large credit union, so we have been successful. At the time, we were a little over 60 years old. We were growing, but just gradually. We had all the different products and services that our members wanted. It's just finding a way to make them aware of it in a soft sell type of way. We didn't want to be a hard sell, forcing things onto our members that they didn't need. But in the same sense, we didn't want our members going elsewhere to get services that we already had readily available for them. And so the big crisis was, like I said, we had tried different things, and from leadership on down throughout the organization, there wasn't a belief that we were going to be able to get this to come to fruition as we had hoped it would be, and an actual a service culture change that meant that we live what we were doing, and it wasn't something. It's kind of like a diet. You know, everybody knows what they need to do. And a diet really, a diet is something to fix a weight problem, but a diet really is a lifestyle change that you have to change. And the same thing with the service culture. You know, you can implement a change, but then it has to be something that's ongoing and continues. And it's something that you realize this is not going to change. Now, we'll modify it and improve it and enhance it, but it's not something that's going away. It's not going to be gone. This isn't something we're going to do for a year and say, okay, that was nice, and let's try something else. This is something that became part of our culture, became part of just the way we do business. So the crisis really was there wasn't a belief that we could come up with something like that to actually fit the bill for what we were needing.
And Mike Neal mentioned there was a pivotal meeting. What happened at that meeting from your perspective?
Well, a lot of times you would get is you get pushback. I mean, to make a change like that, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of commitment. Everybody's already busy. You know, it takes everyone's buy into it. And because there wasn't a lot of confidence that it was going to be, it was easier to say why we couldn't do it than to say how we could do it. You know, because how we did it, how we could do it, is going to be a lot of work I just kind of said it was time to find the right way to do it. And there really wasn't a we can't option here. We were going to find a way to do it. And so that's when Mike came along and Service Star was implemented. It took some buy-in. Still, there was skepticism still all the way into it. But once it was in place and we saw year after year the improvements, everyone is pretty excited. And even today, embraces it, I think, fully. You know, even our newest employees come in now, they know what's expected of them, and there's not a question as to how they're supposed to operate and how they're supposed to treat our membership and how they're supposed to deliver services to them. So
yeah, but I mean, even at that meeting itself, though, wasn't it kind of this tough situation? You know, you said why can't you know, you were frustrated because all you heard was why they can't do it. But to you, the decision was already made. And so you said, do you remember what you said at the meeting?
I don't know the exact words, but what I always use in situations, whether it was the service culture decision or not, is that don't tell me that we can't do it. Tell me how we can do it. And then we'll decide if we're willing to take the steps to do that, and if it's something that we're willing to pay for and to dedicate the resources to doing it.
And Mike, how are you able to say something kind of strong like that at that time and actually be well received by your people?
Well, I think that's the role of the leader. You know, you have to get to a point. There's a lot of times you lead by example, and a good leader, and Tinker is affiliated with the military base here, Tinker Air Force Base. And a lot of times you see leaders lead by the way they carry themselves, what they show their expectations, what they expect of themselves. And people follow because they know that's the way it's supposed to be. But there comes a point in time when if there's disagreement, that you have to decide this. If we're going to get over the hump, then somebody's got to step up and say, and it takes in this case, the CEO and the president to say, we are going to do it. This is not a majority decision. We are going to do it and push them to do better things and great things.
What were the results after that meeting?
Well, I think that the senior team especially knew they were on the course to get this done, but it was getting it through all the other levels of management all the way through the employees. And we had to keep saying, I remember creating a card when we did it, said Service Star, and on the back of it said for today, for tomorrow, forever. And so that everybody realized this isn't something that was going to go away. Don't think it as the fad move for the day, or the fad production for the day. This is what we're going to be doing, and it's something that's going to carry on. And so it really was about 2008 when that happened. So, you know, we're eight, nearly 9 years later, and it's we've been very successful. In fact, I think it's really the key to what's enabled us to grow pretty remarkably the last 8 or 9 years.
You're listening to the Credit Union Leadership Podcast with Mike Neal, where Mike helps you, the credit union leader, to create a thriving credit union culture where you live. To learn more about the services that Michael Neal and Associates offers, visit michaelneal.com. And now back to the story. Here's Mike Neal's commentary on what it was about Clober that made him successful as a leader.
One of the things that made that possible for Mike is he's a true believer. There is nothing false about Mike. He cares about that credit union. He cares about his members. He cares about that community. And so everybody knows that every decision he's going to make is going to be in the best interest of all those constituencies rather than his self or his salary, his glorification. And so when he said that, that immediately ended that debate, because he had the trust among his management team that if he said it that way, it must be for the right reason. So that's the key thing. You've got to have great leadership, and that's got to start with a leader who can be trusted to have the best interests of their members at heart, the best interests of the community, the employees, and everything flipped then, and then everybody began to be open to making change, because by definition, if you're going to, whatever term you want to use, enhance, mature, change culture, well, that's going to require behavioral changes, and it's got to start with managers.
Right.
It's got to start with the management team, because the employees certainly couldn't change their behaviors until they see their leaders change their behaviors first.
Culture trickles down.
Absolutely.
So what was the result of that meeting?
Well, you began to see people much more open to, while maybe being skeptical about some of the things that we were implementing and some of the things we were wanting to do, which had been proven to work other places, by the way. But there was some healthy skepticism rather than simply disagreeing to try to slow down progress. And I think this is what happens a lot in organizations, that a challenge begins to be that if I can delay it long enough by objecting and arguing and finding a hole, then what I do is I slow the progress down to the point where it becomes frustrating. And so then 2 years later, there's something over there that's spinny shiny. Oh, look, let's go merge this credit union. We'll get back to the culture thing later, but you know, right now we've got to go do this because this is an emergency. And then they say they're going to go back to it, but they never do. And people have learned to obfuscate, to slow things down, till it becomes frustrating. And nobody likes to be frustrated. People like to achieve. And so it ends it. And it develops a concept that I call organizational ADD. And I wrote about this in my second book, Coaching for Performance. Organizational ADD is a term that I use to define how credit unions get challenged to implementing things. I mean, we've all kind of been there, right? The CEO stands up and says, you know, we have come from our strategic planning meeting and we have seen the future.
We've been on the mountaintop and we brought it down to the people.
Exactly. And so here we have laid before you the foundations of our future, yeah. You know, and the employees are sitting there like going, are they out of hot dogs or, you know, I hope they got chocolate covered donuts. I mean, they're not nearly as excited as the leadership is because of the concept of organizational ADD, which is this. People learn not to invest their emotional energies into things that aren't really going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we believe it's going to happen as leaders, against all past experience. We stand up and say, look, this is going to happen. And they're all going, whatever. And we can't understand why they don't get so excited.
Right.
Well, it's because of what happens in that example that I gave you. Let's see it happen. I worry about it when it happens, but I don't see any change happening.
Yeah. So let me ask this. What were the keys to the success of that credit union changing their culture?
First, you have to have a leader who is focused and has a, I'm going to use the term moral compass, that is tuned in to servant leadership. For example, I believe growth is an outcome. It's important. I want to grow my business. And I think growth is an indicator of success. But it's not the reason I do what I do. I don't exist to grow. I exist to serve my clients in very value-added ways that I don't think my competitors do. And to create success for my clients. Well, as a result, I grow. To create a great culture, which is going to take some change, then you have to have someone who has the moral compass of a servant leader, that we're going to do this simply because it's the right thing to do, and I believe that. Because then when it's the right thing to do, you're not going to quit. Then they've got to have trust among their management team. And then you've got to have, I would call, again, this is a Cotter term, cultural tipping points.
You talked about what the keys were for the success of the credit union that you mentioned before with Mike Kloiber. But talk to me about thriving credit union culture in general. So my question is, what are the most essential elements that make up this thriving credit union culture?
Yeah, I think there's three keys to it. One, you've got to have a compelling mission. I was at a credit union conference, and I was the keynote speaker, and there were 250 credit unions there, their CEOs and board chairmen, kind of an exclusive club. And I was doing a session that I had entitled Missional Leadership. It was about how missional leaders can create culture. And so, you know, there's been times in my career where I've thought, this is going to work really great, and it didn't. But you live and learn. So I came up with this great exercise. I ask everybody to share with their table partners their credit union mission. And out of 250 credit unions, only one credit union CEO even knew their mission.
Wow.
So if you don't know your mission, then you are left to lead toward growth. You're left to lead toward financial performance, because that's all there is. You don't know why you're purposed. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, everybody does. Sure, Mike. I mean, you know, we know why we exist, right? But you can't communicate it. So you have to have a compelling mission. And the down and dirty of it, I believe, is it's got to be short enough to be on a bumper sticker and not a slogan.
Right.
So, for example, where service lives would be terrible. You know, where you matter would be trivial. But something like to improve the financial well-being of our members and the communities we serve would be pretty spot on. I mean, you could make that better, I'm sure, just off the top of my head, because it speaks outwardly to your core purpose and what you're trying to get done. So you've got to have a great mission. You've got to have trust. You've got to have trust with the employees to the leaders. Because when you think about it, as a leader, you're leading somewhere where you've never been, more than likely, right? I mean, you haven't been to this place. You haven't been to this culture. Maybe you were a number two at another credit union or a manager at another credit union where you saw it done, and now you're going to lead toward that. You could say, hey, I came from here, and you know what that place is like, and it's better than this, so follow me. For a lot of people, that's not where they're going to be at. They're gonna be saying, hey, we're going to develop this culture that is going to engage in improving the financial well-being of our members, the communities we serve, and at a greater rate and better way than we ever have before. Follow me. Well, you've never been there. They know you've never been there. So why should they follow you? All right. So there's got to be this trust that Mike's not going to lead us to a place that's bad. So you've got to have trust. And then the last thing you've got to have is you've got to have engagement. You know, you've got to have employee engagement. You can't create a culture without engaged employees. Now, can you begin to lead culture with employees that are less than fully engaged? Yes. But you can't have a culture that is outstanding and purposeful and missional without engaged employees.
Right.
So that's three things you got to have.
So as we look towards kind of the next few episodes in this season, you know, we're going to be talking about several different things. Mm-hmm. How is this episode and the message that you're delivering now essential to understand before we move forward?
It's the capstone. It is the key cornerstone. You cannot create culture without outstanding leadership. You simply can't. And everything else that you do is going to be a symbol of creating culture. You have to have effective leadership. And I'm not necessarily talking about management skills, asset liability management. I mean, that's kind of a given, right? You've got to run the operation. So it's the characteristics of effective leaders have to be present in not only the leader of the credit union, but in the leaders of the credit union. If not, you're not going to get very far. You're going to feel like you are because you've changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
But the only thing that defines culture is behaviors. Everything else is a delusion.
If you were to kind of pinpoint the greatest challenge when you're creating this kind of thriving credit union culture, what would it be just in all of your experience, all your consultations, all your travels and your interactions with leadership? What's the greatest challenge?
You can't flip a switch. You know, that's what we want to do. We like to install things. We're going to install a new lending platform. We're going to install a new core processor. We like to install things. You know, we have a cutover date. You don't have a cutover date for culture. You know, effective January 1, 2018, our culture will be thriving because we've done these seven things. You know, it's antithetical to the way we find satisfaction in things, of making a plan, implementing it, having a date certain which it will be working.
Yeah.
So, and it's not dependent upon just a series of events. It happens when it happens. And so, it really is something that creates, even within that management team, that organizational ADD of gee, we've been working on this a long time, haven't we? Oh, look over there, shiny spinny. Let's go do that right now, right? And so the idea is that it works against the way business people like to attack a problem, create a solution, a one best solution, and implement it in a sequential, progressive way with a date certain. Yeah. In which that has happened.
That would kind of short circuit, no pun intended, installing something. It would short circuit the actual substance of true change.
Yeah.
Because what it is it's people changing. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, you can't install software into a person. Their heart, their mind, their will is involved. But if you do it right, from what I'm hearing you say, if you really do the hard work of taking initiative and really making it personal as a servant leader, the change happens. Like, it's real.
It's magical. When you see it happen, it's magical. It's just the most, it's like a magic trick. The magician has a certain set of things that he does to create that illusion, right? So he knows how he does it. But everybody sits back and says, wow, how did he do that? And so it really is, when I use the term magical, that's probably a pretty good analogy. But that's certainly a challenge. And we talked about the organizational ADD. I think we live with the ghosts of our past. When we have stood up in front of our group and said multiple times, we're going to do A, B, and C, and then we don't implement A, B, and C because things happen, the year gets crazy, the economy went nuts, we had this opportunity, we had to make a call, and we had to do this, but we'll get to this next year. So you live with the ghost of your past, and so the old Chicken Little idea, the sky's falling, the sky's falling. When you say what you're going to do, but this time you mean it, it doesn't mean everybody else is going to understand, okay, well, this time they mean it because they said they mean it. So the idea of living with the ghost of your past make it difficult for people to follow in behind you to the degree that we would like when we're ready for them to do so. And then lastly, it is one of those things where you have to be willing to hold people accountable for behaviors. And I will be honest, you know, one of the things that I've seen in my years in leading a credit union, my years of working with credit unions, assisting leadership teams, is credit unions many times don't do a great job on holding people accountable, certainly for behaviors. And we live in a very litigious society. We live in a society where the number one thing is don't get sued. And so, you know, if you're doing your job poorly, you show up to work late every day, okay, we can discipline that. You make mistakes every day, we could discipline that. But what happens when a manager yells at an employee? What happens when a manager in a meeting conducts themselves in a less than professional way? Does someone pull that person aside and say, that behavior is unacceptable? That's not in alignment with our core values. One of our core values is respect, and that wasn't respectful. Or they say, oh, that's just Jim. That's just Jim. Jim's just high strung. Jim's passionate. You know, Jim just gets into it. Everybody knows Jim. And when that happens, man, you set your culture back. I don't even want to say how long, but you set it back a long time. Because people believe change is occurring because those behaviors that are now considered to be out of alignment with the culture that's emerging have to be redirected. Put all the values you want on the wall, you know, respect, teamwork, whatever they are.
Right.
It's a joke. And the truth of the matter is, it is easier to paint words on the wall than to live them out yourself and then hold people accountable that don't. And that is one of the big challenges, is if you're not going to redirect behaviors, that may have been okay in the previous culture, but are not okay in the emerging or in the new culture, you're not going to change culture.
Yeah. Speed of the leader, speed of the pack.
Yep, exactly.
And if it's going to change, things in the leader have to change, because your system is perfectly designed to get the results that you're getting. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to change anything company-wide, something massive has to change from the leader. And it doesn't really trickle down. It kind of trickles up, because if the leader is the servant, mm-hmm. then everyone else represents him, and he takes responsibility, or she takes responsibility for what the company's, what the organization's going to look like on the surface.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it requires great intentionality. You know, every credit union has a culture now. We talk about it like, you know, unless you intentionally build it, you don't have a culture. Well, sure you do. You know, a culture is a agreed upon, whether it's a covert or overt, set of behaviors and principles, most of which are not written, right? You just kind of learn them by, oh, don't say that, or, oh, be sure to say this. Don't do that. Be sure to do this. You learn it by trial and error. But the challenge is that culture develops organically over years and then is extremely powerful. That's what makes changing culture intentionally so difficult, because any culture that develops organically is so powerful.
You've been listening to the Credit Union Leadership Podcast with Mike Neal. If you want Michael Neal and Associates to help you and your credit union develop a thriving credit union culture, visit michaelneal.com.